And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is radical thinking. We're talking about some of the most radically different ways of looking at things. My first guest claims that living in the city is better than living in paradise like we do here in Ventura County. We examined the benefits of geographic proximity, and we discussed his latest book, Triumph of the City. My next guest is a maverick who burst on the scene several years ago with a manifesto for challenging conventional wisdom and showcasing the power of business at its best. He goes radical in his business thinking in his latest book, Practically Radical. We'll discuss the new business paradigms to transform your company, shake up your industry, and challenge yourself. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Bill Taylor is a writer, a speaker, and an entrepreneur who has shaped the global conversation about the best ways to compete, innovate, and succeed. He's the co-founder and founding editor of Fast Company Magazine, a magazine that has won countless awards and earns a passionate following among executives and entrepreneurs around the world. Bill wrote a regular column, business column, under new management for the New York Times, as well as a monthly column for London's Guardian newspaper. He now writes a popular management blog for Harvard Business Review. He's an adjunct lecturer at Babson College and co-author of three other books on strategy, leadership, and innovation. He's a graduate of Princeton University and the MIT Sloan School of Business Management. He lives with his wife in Wellesley, Massachusetts, along with their two daughters. Welcome to the show, Bill. How are you doing today?
It's great to be here. I want to license your nickname. I want to be known as Billy the Brain East. I think we'll see if we can work out the terms of that.
We'll work out the business arrangements later, but you are truly, truly an innovator, and I take my hat off to you for founding Fast Company Magazine and also for your new book, Practically Radical. But let's dive into it, because I like what Albert Einstein says, the problems that cannot be solved with the same level of awareness that created them. Or as you put it in the book, if all you do is all you've done, then all you're going to get is what you've ever got. The problem is that platitudes like this, you know, they're well and good when things are, progress is going along in a linear sort of fashion, but we're in an age of total disruption now. So why did you decide to write Practically Radical now, and when does it change the name of the game? I mean, talk to me about this radical change we're going through.
Well, I actually think the kind of period we're going through now, simultaneously kind of an economic slowdown and also a sense that whether it's technology, markets, finance, the world is being reinvented before our eyes, was a great time for a book like this to come out, even though it made me nervous at the beginning, because I finally realized that the trouble with times of great change is that as we try to learn lessons from them, so many people as individuals in their careers, so many leaders of organizations look at all the change and say, wow, this is really the time for me to get conservative, to hunker down, to stop taking risks, and that sort of thing. And it turns out, if you want to, as an individual or as an organization, really prosper and excel at a time like this, that's the worst possible reaction. That the only way today to stand out from the crowd is to stand for something special. The most successful individuals, the most successful organizations, don't just try to kind of out-compete or outperform people on the margins. They try to really redefine the very terms of competition by embracing one-of-a-kind ideas in a world filled with me-too thinking. And it's really hard to do, which is why so many organizations feel stuck, confused, uncertain. And the ones that are really standing out, breaking from the pack, are the ones that are, don't just say, hey, we got to sell competitive products and services, say we have to stand for really original and distinctive ideas. And those are the sorts of organizations I highlight in this book.
All right, we're talking to Bill Taylor, author of the book Practically Radical. And Bill, I like what you have to say, but let me challenge you if I can here, because expansion in business ideas and competition is easy when business credit is available to expand. But how can a business leader finance the type of aggressive expansion that you're talking about to grow closer to their consumers when money isn't so readily available?
Well, I don't know. You know, to me, I'd almost argue the opposite point, which is in a booming economy, in periods of easy money, what happens is that so many phonies and imitators and pretenders are able to do things and get into your business that, in a weird way, if you genuinely stand for something new, exciting, important, it's harder to get attention for yourself and harder to make progress. You know, there was a great interview with Warren Buffett the legendary investor at the time of the economic crisis a couple of years ago, and somebody said to him, why is it that so often in America people have good ideas and then those good ideas get kind of disfigured beyond all recognition? And what he said was, well, progress is a function of the three I's. First come the innovators who do something really exciting, important. Then come the imitators who basically copy what the innovators do. Sometimes they make it a little better, sometimes they make it a little worse. And then come the idiots who come late into the game and ruin things for everybody. Well, it's during periods of easy credit and booms that the imitators and the idiots get to play. But it's in periods like this that all the benefits go to the innovators. So I think in a weird way, the tougher the climate, the better the opportunities for people who want to do something genuinely new and different.
All right. We're talking to Bill Taylor, everybody, about his book, Practically Radical. And, Bill, what I liked about your book is you do a deep dive into 25 companies that you feel are making remarkable strides in these tough economic times. Some of the names on this list probably won't surprise many of my listeners. A couple of the names on the list made me sit up and take notice. The list includes IBM, probably no great surprise there. Zappos, no great surprise there. The Girl Scouts, kind of a surprise. Interpol, kind of a surprise. Pedigree Dog Food. Kind of a surprise on the list. So let's, without going into each of them, what about these companies? What do these companies teach us about progress in disruptive times?
Well, the first, I'd say the first lesson is, in particularly in organizations that have been around a long time that really want to change the game, doing something really new and different from the future doesn't mean disavowing or breaking from your past. What it often means is rediscovering and reinterpreting your past, remembering why your organization was at some point in its history exciting, compelling, interesting, and kind of getting back to that spirit and values. Girl Scouts is a great example. They're going to be celebrating their 100th birthday next year, and a new CEO from the inside, a new CEO named Kathy Cloninger, came in 5 or 6 years ago, and she realized, well, we're a ubiquitous brand. Everybody knows us, but nobody, certainly our target market of teenage girls, nobody thinks of us as cool, hip, interesting. And so she set about a very radical program to change all that, new offerings, new marketing, new uniforms, all this kind of stuff. And she got a lot of resistance in the ranks of the Girl Scouts. And the way she overcame that resistance was to go back and rediscover, back from 1912, Juliet Gordon Lowe, the woman who started the whole Girl Scout organization, and reminded her colleagues what a firebrand, what an activist, what a rabble-rouser their founder really was. And as she had come back to life, she'd be mortified and appalled by how conservative, how cautious, how bland the Girl Scouts had become. And so her mantra was WWJD, not what would Jesus do, but what would Juliet do? And the fact that she was able to remind her colleagues of the incredibly exciting and daring and provocative ideas around which the Girl Scouts were founded gave everybody a sense of confidence and license to go off and create a new and different future. And so history can often be a very useful guide to the future.
All right. We're talking to Bill Taylor, author of the book Practically Radical. Since you did a deep dive on the Girl Scouts, let's take a look at another company or an organization that you list on your list, Interpol. Now, what can Interpol teach us about progress in disruptive times?
What Interpol teaches, I think, more than anything else, is that another way to change an organization that's been around a long time is to look for ideas far outside your existing industry or comfort zone and ask what would happen if we applied those ideas to our field. I mean, everybody wants innovation and creativity and change, and yet at the same time, everybody's worried about taking too many risks, getting too far afield, that sort of thing. Well, one way to unleash the power of new ideas in your organization is to find ideas and practices that are routine and proven to work in some other field, something totally unrelated to yours, and then ask yourself, what would happen if we migrated those ideas into our industry? In the case of Interpol, it was to look at Google and what Google had become in the world of search engines and ask themselves, one of the great threats, one of the great security threats, terrorism threats in the world today, is that there are literally millions and millions of lost, but more often the case, stolen or forged passports that people use to travel across borders when they really shouldn't be traveling across borders.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron Noble, the wonderful Secretary General of Interpol, said, we can become an Interpol, basically the Google of a database of lost and stolen passports. It's kind of shocking at airports today how easy it is to get through security with a passport that is a legitimate passport, but it's something that one that you've stolen from somebody else. And so they have built this absolutely remarkable database of millions of lost and stolen, and they've finally begun to make progress on the challenge of preventing people from crossing borders who shouldn't be. And it was very much rooted in Ron Noble looking at Google, understanding what would it be if Interpol basically became the Google of lost and stolen passports. It became as easy for security personnel to search that database as it is for us to use the Google search engine. It has really changed the game in terms of an impressive new offering from Interpol.
A very exciting example from your book, Practically Radical. Bill, I want to shift gears, if I can, just a little bit, and talk to you about a challenge that we've got right now. For the first time in human history, we have four generations of workers in the workforce at the same time. We have the traditionals who are just starting to retire, baby boomers, Gen X, and Gen Y. So you wrote your book, Practically Radical. For which group is most likely going to embrace what you're talking about in the book? And then, follow-on question, isn't it going to make some of what you write going to make baby boomers and traditionals very, very uncomfortable in your book, Practically Radical?
Well, I would hope that most of the ideas cross all those generations. I don't think creativity, new ways of thinking, those attributes belong to people of any particular demographic cohort or any particular chronological age. I think it's more than anything a state of mind. And I write about in the book many executives and entrepreneurs who've been around for a long, long time who have what I like to think of as a truly blank sheet of paper mindset. They can really look at old industries, familiar customers, ongoing problems in a really new and different way. I think where it does make people uncomfortable, again, I don't think being uncomfortable is a function of your chronological ages. One thing I urge leaders everywhere to appreciate is the basic leadership mindset today has changed. And that's just as true if you're a 23-year-old internet upstart or a 63-year-old executive at a big company, which is it used to be that if you were the boss, if you were in charge, the idea was you did the thinking and the rank-and-file colleagues did the work. You had to be, quote-unquote, the smartest person in the room, no matter what room you were standing in or sitting in at any time. That, to me, the new logic of leadership is what does it mean to be a leader in a world where nobody alone is as smart as everybody together. The job of the leader today is to create what I like to call an architecture of participation where as many as people as possible inside the organization, as many people as possible outside the organization, customers, partners, people who are just interested in what you're doing, can give you a little bit of their brain power, and so that this kind of collective mind can come up with insights, ideas, solutions that the individual mind, no matter how good or experienced, could possibly come up with on his or her own. The term I like to use in the book is humbition. The best leaders are, on the one hand, very ambitious. They want to have a big impact in the world, and yet they are at the same time very humble about how are they're going to get from where they are today to the impact they want to have and where they want to be. And this notion of a blend of ambition and humility or humbition is, I think, the leadership style that works today. And to be honest, that makes a lot of people uncomfortable.
All right, humbition. We're talking to Bill Taylor, everybody, his book, Practically Radical. And, Bill, you've got William Webster spinning in his grave with that one. But let me ask you to prove that point and really to cement it for my listeners. If you would, please, tell us the story about your interview with Boston Scientific co-founder John Abel Taylor.
Yeah, John Abley is his name.
Abley, sorry.
Boy, it's going to be tough to do it quick, but I'll try. John Abley is one of the great technology innovators in business, the co-founder of Boston Scientific, literally a billionaire. But for all of his business success, he had a personal drama or mystery that tugged at him, which was that his father, who was a submarine commander in World War II, kissed his family goodbye as World War II was beginning and said, I'll see you after the war. And not only, you know, didn't come home from the war, which is sad enough to begin with, but his submarine had been lost at sea, and the U.S. Navy had no answers for, you know, where did it go down, when did it go down, why did it go down. And so this was, you know, John Abley, when this happened, was a young child. But this mystery had gnawed him over the years, and he decided, hey, I'm a billionaire now. I'm going to finally solve the mystery of what happened to my dad. Well, he didn't solve it by taking $100 million and hiring the greatest minds in the world or whatever. He solved it by taking one of these nobody alone is as smart as everybody together kind of approaches. And so he learned one day that somebody, a collector of naval artifacts, had found the drawings and wiring of his father's submarine. That had led that person who was looking to figure out what is this exactly to a Japanese naval historian who had actually translated some Japanese language dispatches of a battle between an unknown American submarine and a Japanese ship off the coast of Alaska. Well, long story short, that turned into this worldwide hunt that was orchestrated by John Abele in the sense that he got people interested, but involved thousands of people from all over the world, people who were experts in naval technology, people who were experts in military strategy, people who were experts in searching archives and stuff, to voluntarily form this group to try to figure out what happened to the sub, where it might have gone down. And lo and behold, based on all this grassroots innovation, not only did they literally discover the wreckage of the submarine way, way below the Bering Sea off the coast of Alaska, but another set of volunteers came around to track down living family members of every single sailor on that sub so that they could have the same kind of closure. And these are people who are great at scouring genealogical records and all that kind of stuff. And it became this global grassroots effort to solve a mystery that this one individual could never have solved on his own.
What a remarkable story, and just one of the many key points that's brought out in the book, Practically Radical. We're talking to Bill Taylor. Bill, I know we're short on time, but if people are interested in what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
The best thing to do is just go to practicallyradical.com. There's more about the book, more about me, links to a lot of the stuff in the book, and that's probably the best place.
Practicallyradical.com. I love it. Bill, thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
It was loads of fun, Billy. Thanks very
much. Take care.